Welcome to Sidetracked, your unofficial agency of record. I'm Emily.
And I'm Shane, and we help run Trek, a tech-driven creative services agency based in Rockford, Illinois. Trek is a full-service marketing agency, which means we do it all. And we've been around since 1995, which means we've seen it all.
In season one of Sidetracked, we'll cover everything from AI and digital advertising to branding best practices and how to stand out with print marketing.
We believe that problems are identified by the curious and solved by the courageous.
Which is why we always start with a question. So today's question, how do I get more leads? And to help us answer this question, I can't think of anyone better than our CEO and president, Laura Bennett. Thanks for joining us, Laura.
Thanks for having me, ladies.
I should also mention, also original founder, one of the original founders of Trek. So very important person here. Very lucky to have her.
This is a family business here. Emily and I are both daughters of the original founders of Trek. So Laura and MJ, who's Emily's dad, started Trek in 1995. And, you know, now we work at the family business.
The rest is history.
The rest is history.
So Laura, you know, customers come to us, new customers especially, and they're always looking for one thing, and that's more leads, which makes sense because that's how you prove ROI on your marketing. I hear often, and I'm curious if you hear the same, one phrase in particular, which is, we have been running digital ads for the last 2 months. It's not working. I want to buy a list. What do you say when somebody says something like that to you? And we're going to assume, for the sake of conversation, it's a totally new relationship. It's a new customer, potential customer coming to us. What's your response?
Well, the first thing I would do is ask what they consider is a quality lead. So you have to go all the way back to the beginning of your development of your campaign and your strategy and talk about who you're trying to reach and what it is you're trying to say and the number and quality of leads that you're trying to get. So you have to have a goal, first of all. And then second, what is the value of a lead? A lot of times people look at the number of leads they get and not necessarily what happened to those leads. So following them through the whole process, if the lifetime value of a customer is $1.5 million, and you spent $550 on your digital ads and you got one lead that generated a sale, we would consider that successful.
Mm-hmm. One thing we're constantly working with our clients is marketing sales alignment to get constant feedback from sales on what happened to the leads, what was the quality, and to just close the loop. We love it when marketing and sales is working in the same CRM so that we can just build reporting around following those leads all the way through. But if they aren't, that's okay too. We just have to work really closely with sales to ask those questions and get that feedback.
Exactly. And with sales involved, then you get into determining things like, what is the sales cycle? Something that is not a quality lead today, 6 months from now might be. So that's the first thing when clients say to us, I'm not getting any leads. My digital ads aren't working. So we start there. And then if we hear, I want to buy a list, first we cringe.
Yes. Please don't buy a list.
Please don't buy a list.
If you see my face on a Zoom call, you'll watch me flinch when you say that.
Right. And there are a number of reasons that you don't want to do that. First of all, the idea of a quality marketing communications program is hitting your customers and prospects where they live. With geographically, physically, relationally, emotionally. And if you're just throwing messages out to a list of possible prospects, maybe even some customers are in there, you risk alienating them because people expect relevant content to be coming through their direct mail. And aside from the fact that it won't work, it also will degrade the quality of your email platform. And we'll get you in email jail in a number of different platforms that you might be using, which obviously is not a situation you want to get into.
Mm-hmm. And when we do see companies that are buying lists, often it turns out some of those emails are junk. They're getting hard bounces on those emails. And the ones that they do get are often low quality. So we just never recommend buying a list. It's pretty much always a bad idea.
Yeah. And as a, like a, if we put our consumer hat on for a second too, or our, you know, customer hat on here, if you receive a cold marketing email, like your impression, Laura, to your point of the brand that's sending you that email, like I can tell when my data has been sold and I immediately hold that against the brand. Also, I'm learning that maybe I'm just like a bitter person because of marketing. In the first episode, we talked about my email preferences, and now I'm learning that maybe, you know, this is also coming up here. But
people's inboxes are really sacred. Like, you know, it feels like when you realize that your email address has been sold, it feels like a small violation. So exactly. I don't think you're wrong at all, Emily. When you get an email that from a company and you have not opted into that, especially these days with people much more cognizant of privacy and privacy regulations that are out there, you know that that company is doing something wrong and you probably then don't want to do business with them. So it's just a bad idea all around.
Right. And if email is an integral part of your marketing communications strategy, what you want to do is build your opt-in list. So you want to be talking to people who want to hear your message, and you want to be communicating relevant information that they find valuable and they want to get.
First party data for the win.
So buying a list is never a good idea. Full stop. You've identified what a quality lead is with a really maybe in-depth and open communication with sales that should continue. It shouldn't just be a one-time conversation of what's a good lead to you, salesperson A. It should be a, I got these leads, give me your feedback on an ongoing basis so that it can continue to give you more leads that are relevant, and your needs as a company, as a salesperson, are going to change. So that alignment needs to stay in place. So you've identified quality leads. Let's go back to the scenario of the digital ads. Your digital ads still aren't working. You've been zeroed in on those things. Now you've identified quality leads. You are not going to buy a list. What can you do?
Well, the value of marketing communications is in all of the different tools that you have at your disposal to reach the prospects and customers that you're trying to reach. So when I said that the idea is about connecting with customers where they're at, it's not always on a computer screen. And if it is, and they're getting your message at that time, they will be more responsive to that message if you've communicated with them in some other way first, or many other ways first, that they value, like even print. Print marketing, the statistics show that print marketing is one of the most trusted forms of communication. And if they've already seen some of your print marketing several times, or they've seen your email because they've opted into it, they've seen you at a trade show, which also is a very trusted way to communicate with customers, they're a lot more likely then to interact with your message on the digital platform. And the other way around, if you send out an email, and they would be more likely to interact with your message if they've seen you on a website, or if they've seen you in some other relevant media platforms that they trust and find valuable.
Mm-hmm. One thing we're definitely seeing in the last couple of years is a resurgence of traditional marketing channels, and it feels like maybe 10, 15 years ago, you know, when a lot of these new digital channels were first coming out or were really hot, social media got big, so many people just went all digital and just put all their eggs in that basket. It was cheaper. It's a big reason. And people were excited about it. But now the pendulum is swinging back a bit. So now to diversify your channels doesn't mean, you know, exploring all of your digital options. It means actually adding back in some traditional marketing channels so that you can reach people who may be digitally fatigued, who are like Emily and constantly unsubscribing from every email that they get. So let's talk about like, what are all the channel options? So if somebody came to us and they were like, hey, my digital ads aren't working, I'm going to buy a list. And we're like, no, please don't buy a list. We have the conversation about lead quality. Then we're going to start talking to them about other channels that they might want to expand into, not just digital ads. What are the other channel options out there?
They are numerous. I actually can take this back 40 years. And when we were doing B2B advertising at agencies, and there wasn't this thing called digital, and the way that you communicated with your customers and prospects was, you know, trade publication advertising, which really is a broadcast methodology, PR, trade shows, print collateral, direct mail, cold calling on the phone, you know, dropping into somebody's office randomly and schmoozing with the receptionist to try to get into the person that you're trying to see.
Now that is old school.
That is old school. But my point is going to be that it was personal. And the thing that we lost somewhat with digital, and especially digital ads, was the personal touch. And people are really enjoying and appreciating today some of the old ways to connect on a personal level, the tactile approach with print advertising, and direct mail, especially, you know, the touch of the paper, the personality of the piece can really tell a lot about a brand without even somebody reading it. It's just immediate and relevant. So there's direct mail, trade publication advertising,
billboards,
customer referrals,
which are really important. And there are obviously ways that you can go about making sure that you get reviews. And word of mouth is still one of the most prominent ways people find a brand. So reviews are really important. But the real point of the whole thing is that using all of them or a combination of whatever gets you to the place where your customer or prospect wants to meet and talk with you is what you want to be able to incorporate.
Mm-hmm. And we're definitely not saying don't do digital, because yes, still do pay-per-click ads or paid social media. Definitely still use email. Obviously your website, your landing pages, your content marketing, social media marketing, everything that has, you know, become really popular in the last 10 to 15 years, they all still work, but they work best in concert with some of these traditional channels. So hit someone on Instagram and via direct mail. That's actually my preferred combo. I love it when I'm seeing the Instagram ad and then I get something in the mailbox and I'm like, oh, you found me at my home.
There is this kind of a blending of that personalization in the old way of thinking and the old way of doing things. You had to be personal, but you didn't always have the tools to do that at scale. And now we're at this place where you have the tools to personalize at scale, but then it makes it less personal because you can do it at scale. So there's kind of this like tightrope you have to walk between being intentional with your marketing, knowing your audiences, demonstrating that knowing. Everyone wants to feel known. Everyone wants to know, they want to feel understood in what they're looking for and heard. And that's kind of the tightrope, is I have all of this data. How do I use it in a way that makes my audiences feel understood and want to engage with us as a brand, and then not making things so hyper-personal and so blanket personal. I don't know if that's the right way to say that, but it's
broadcast personal.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's an interesting place to be where there's a lot of opportunity. And people might say like things like AI make that really easy and really great. But I still think that there's this element of human understanding and appealing to a person, person to person, and applying that into marketing.
And I think what smart brands are doing is leveraging their data in a way that personalizes based on the individual customer's journey. So if you know that they've bought, you know, your top three products and you're sending a direct mail piece that you can easily personalize because you've got the data and we have variable data printing, then why not suggest the next three products that people usually buy after those first three products, the complementary products? Acknowledge that you're aware of what they've done with your brand already, and then talk to them about what the next step is. So not just using personalization to say, you know, hi, first name. It's so far beyond that that you can do. Not all brands are doing it, but the ones that are really succeeding with some of these traditional print channels are. They're making them much more personal than you ever could in the past.
One of the really important things when we're talking to clients and we're talking about omnichannel approaches is, clients like the fact that digital is measurable. And so when we're building programs for clients, we have to make sure that everything that we do has a goal and that we can measure against that goal. So, you know, trade publication advertising, you know, traditionally it just really was not measurable unless, you know, you had a direct response phone number on the ad. Today, there are lots of things we can do with QR codes. And you want to be able to do that. You don't want to put anything in your omnichannel approach that is not measurable against a goal that you have set for it.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
So there's hope. You can get leads even if your digital ads aren't working.
Well, I think the other thing to talk about with measurement of some of the traditional channels is really leveraging some of the technologies that are out there to engage people further into some of the traditional ways that we communicate. For instance, direct mail. We have several programs going right now where we send out a lumpy, which is a dimensional mailer. There are pieces inside it. Very, very high open rates, obviously, because it's a box and it's compelling. But inside somewhere there is a link or a QR code or a scan where you can ultimately get to an augmented reality experience that allows somebody to directly interact with your product. So not just measurability, but using the technologies that are available to really make the experience something that somebody would find valuable and could lead directly to a sale if you can use that to demonstrate the benefits of your product.
And that's true. A lot of the print that we do is bridging people over to the brand's digital channels and vice versa. We're moving people back and forth between channels and giving them opportunities in different channels to interact and engage and talk to sales or make a purchase.
And it's also something that has that is evergreen. Some of the things that we do stay with the prospect or the customer, and we can change the experience whenever we want. The thing stays there. We communicate further through email or other ways that we have to communicate with ways that they've opted into us, but we change the message. If they scan it 2 months from now, the message might change. So it's evergreen, and it's a really, really valuable way to nurture leads.
I'm thinking about the landscape of marketing, and obviously as an agency, we've had the benefit of being really close in the print industry. We have a lot of print clients. Since the beginnings, we've always been really invested in print as a channel as well. And I think that's sort of, not to put words in your mouth, Laura, you can tell me what you think, but I think that's sort of grounded us through this whole digital boom of some agencies dropped print completely. They no longer have those skills. And so they've gone this pendulum swing that Shane was talking about, that other end. And we've kind of, I think, tried to stay right in that sweet spot throughout. Times have changed, trends have changed, but I think we've tried to do our best to keep all of our clients outside the print industry, even with that kind of balanced perspective on marketing. So I don't know, I'm curious, just like from the beginning, that was intentional, right?
From the beginning, it definitely was intentional. I mean, we started the company as a full service creative agency that could do websites in 1995. That was rare. But we also were a full service agency, and most of what we all had grown up in was print and some of the traditional media. So from the very beginning, we built programs for our clients that incorporated all of the different ways to communicate. When personal variable data print became popular, we were one of the first out there because we recognized the value of print and recognized how much more valuable it is if you can personalize it. We did one-offs, you know, back in 2000, we did one-off files and put somebody's name in there and their information and printed it and sent it. Before there was technology that allowed us to do that. And so having grown up in that era, we know all of the different ways that you can leverage now digital, you know, CRM and CMSs and all the different things that you can leverage to make sure that your print is as valuable in the multi-channel approach as it can be. But yes, we always, always look for new ways to use print.
I mean, you don't have to work with Trek, obviously. But for those that maybe aren't familiar with doing print marketing these days, or have dabbled in it and said it didn't work, I couldn't measure it, I think it's just worth noting that it is an art. It is a expertise. And you know, designing something in Canva and printing it out at your local Kinko's is not the same as, you know, anybody who has a craft knows that there's an art to it. And so find a good partner who can help you with those things and then strategically place them in the marketing channels. Because if you are so focused on digital and then you just kind of slip in print as a channel without the thought, without the planning, the same strategic approach that you would with the rest of your channels, it's not going to work. And it's going to be a self-fulfilling prophecy of, I tried this, it doesn't work. So you have to be really intentional when you're integrating print to do that with the right print partner or the right agency that can help you really think through what that means to bring a full multi-channel approach to your marketing.
And there are so many cool things you can do with print.
Yeah, we've said variable printing a few times. So like maybe for people who are not in the print world, we've said that doesn't just mean first name, last name. What is it? What is variable data printing? What can you customize? What can't you?
Whatever data points you have about the recipient. So what they've purchased in the past is a big one, because that tells you a lot about what they might purchase in the future. You know their age. You can be relevant in that way. Typically, you know their age.
So you can personalize the content based on these things. You can personalize the imagery based on these things, personalize maps even. So if you wanted to show every recipient of a direct mail piece, you know, the three closest store locations to them on a map, you can do things like that. You know, you can have like a version of the postcard for dog owners that has a dog on it and a version for cat owners that has a cat on it.
And then personalized URLs or pearls, which then they click on, or they scan a QR code and then it says, hey, Shane, like Barbara, her dog, Barbara would love these treats, you know, and then she has her postcard that also has dogs on it that look like Barbara.
Mm-hmm. We've even done personalized augmented reality experiences. So every recipient has a personalized QR code that leads to a personalized AR experience. There's a lot of fun stuff that you can do.
Thanks for joining us, Laura.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
All right. So we've talked about our big question. Now let's talk about how we've solved this for one of our clients.
So, one of our clients was trying to reach control panel builders, and this is a hard group to get in touch with digitally. They're typically...
Are we talking manufacturing? This is like a manufacturing...
Exactly.
Persona.
Okay. Yes, it might be a manufacturing context. They might be, you know, on the floor during the day, not necessarily in front of their computer. They're building control panels. And so this client wanted to get in front of these control panel builders with some automation solutions. And these automation solutions, they're pretty high ticket value items. So they were willing to do a very targeted sort of higher investment campaign to get in front of these folks. And so what we recommended was an account-based marketing approach where we sent a lumpy. I'm going to define those two things. So account-based marketing, we worked with the sales team at our client to identify their top 100 target accounts. So these are not specific people, they're companies, target account companies. And then we identified at those companies who were the people that we needed to get in touch with. And then we designed what we lovingly refer to as a lumpy mailer. A lumpy mailer to track is a piece of mail that is dimensional. It's not mailing flat. It's mailing in a package. This means that it's harder to ignore. It's harder to just throw away. It likely needs to be signed for when it's delivered, which means we can track where it gets delivered, when it gets delivered, and likely when it's been opened. And so we love to, when we're doing an account-based marketing campaign, we love to send these bigger pieces because it just has higher impact and it's more likely to make it to the person that we want to receive it. So we designed the campaign.
Quick question for you. Actually, two questions. First, have you heard lumpy used outside of Trek? Did we invent this?
I'm pretty sure we made it up.
We should get this trademarked.
I know, we should. We should. Yes, let's trademark that.
Lumpy.
Lumpy.
My second question, or maybe more point, is that it's important you said that this was a high value customer, prospects, you know, the service and the product that they were selling is very high value. So for them, the lumpy made sense because it is an investment up front. You're sending a package, so you have the mailing cost, but you also have all the costs to make this lumpy, whatever that is. So it's not necessarily a channel that's appropriate in like every case, or like if you're selling a $5 phone case, you're not going to send a lumpy to win their business. You know, there was a threshold, which a lumpy makes sense.
Yes, this is for account-based marketing campaigns with really high value prospects. So in this case, the company, our client also makes some hand tools. And one of their most popular hand tools was a screwdriver set that came in a really nice box. And it had a handle and then 13 interchangeable parts. So you could make all different, you know, sizes of screwdrivers. And the screwdriver was the company's brand color. And one of our points of contact at the company had mentioned to us, oh, people really love this screwdriver set because it's not likely to walk away on the shop floor because the handle is such a distinct color. Everyone in that shop knows whose screwdriver that is. And so we just kind of kept that in the back of our minds. And then when this opportunity came up, we thought, well, what if we incorporate that screwdriver set in some way? They already have all of these sets in inventory. So it meant taking 100 of these screwdriver sets to send to 100 top prospect accounts. And what we did was we kept back the handle. So we sent the set all of the actual screwdriver interlocking pieces, but we kept the handle and we designed some packaging around the set and a little insert, a print insert to go into the set that said, wait, where's my ergonomic folding and lockable handle? And then there was a QR code and it said, go to, you know, this landing page to set up a meeting with a specialist from our client and we'll send you the handle to complete the set. So we sent this to 100 accounts. They had a 30% meetings booked rate. So 30 out of 100 of those top prospects ended up booking a meeting with someone from our client so that they could learn more about the automation solutions that our client offers and also get that handle to complete the set. So we handled the putting together all of the packaging around the screwdriver sets. We made it look, you know, really nice and like this kind of premium experience when you were opening this packaging. Because we're thinking about the customer experience from start to finish for our client. Like these are their prospects, but hopefully pretty soon these are going to be customers. We're starting the customer experience now with this like really premium white glove experience when they open this like really cool package. And then we also handled the sending out of the handles for the people who ended up booking meetings. We had to work really closely with the sales team to get this done and to make sure it all ran smoothly, but it did. And they ended up getting a lot of sales qualified leads from this campaign.
So it sounds like this was a true multi-channel approach in that we had a package, so direct mail with our Lumpy. There was a QR code that pointed to a landing page. There was a meeting request. So there was a virtual meeting happening. That was the handoff to sales. Were there any emails or any other components and channels?
Great question. Yes. So there was an email campaign to go along with the Lumpy. We sent an initial email to everyone that we planned to send a package to, letting them know that there was a package coming so that they knew to look for it, you know, sort of like watch for a surprise in the mail. That email also gave them an opportunity to update their address if they no longer worked at the office we had on file. And then we sent a series of 5 emails to follow up the Lumpy just to make sure they got it. And then also to provide additional information about the client's automation solutions and to give them another way to book a meeting. So if they got it and they thought, you know, cool, but I'm not going to scan that QR code, then they're getting a follow-up email where they can just click a button in an email. Again, like meeting the individual in the channel where they want to communicate.
So it obviously worked. They booked 30 meetings with a top 100 list. I don't know why 30% doesn't sound as impressive as like 30 out of 100. Like 30 meetings to me sounds more impressive. That's just a mental thing. I don't know why. Well, it sounds like a really cool campaign.
It was. Fun fact, Sidetracked is the name of the bar inside Trek, where it's not uncommon to find a copywriter and a designer brainstorming a new project, an account manager hosting a client for happy hour, and our creative director and head mixologist, Mike Wilson, mixing up something fun.
In this season of Sidetracked, Mike's making his way through a 1970s cocktail recipe book, and we volunteered to be his taste testers.
Mike's at the bar, and he made us a drink.
What'd you make us, Mike?
I made you guys the Barbara, otherwise known as the Russian Bear. It has vodka, creme de cacao. Did I say that right?
I don't think that's right.
I would
right.
say creme de cacao.
Cacao.
Mm-hmm.
Cacao?
Cacao.
Cacao. Cacao. Okay. It's like a Lightning McQueen drink.
That sounded like Kit Kat.
Kit Kat?
Cacao.
Cacao.
Yeah, cacao.
Yeah. Okay. Ca-chow. Here
ca-chow.
We go. And heavy cream. And then it's shaken with ice and strained.
All right. Well, I have to like this drink because my dog's name is Barbara.
Oh, that's why Mike chose it.
Yeah, just for me.
Picked it for you. Mine looks like chocolate milk. Probably will taste like chocolate milk because it is mostly, I think, for the NA version.
Mine is white and foamy, so let's try it.
Feels wrong to use a straw in this, this one.
Unless you blow bubbles. Well, it feels like chocolate milk.
This is not for me.
Shane's a very picky cocktail drinker.
I love you, Mike.
I love you too. But that's fair.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not a vodka fan. It's minty. It tastes kind of like a minty chocolate cookie.
And that's a bad thing?
But then there's like a lot of just vodka to me is just like burning alcohol, you know, it doesn't really have a taste. So there's that, which I don't like.
Mine tastes like a little bit of mint in chocolate milk. And I happen to be a big fan of chocolate milk. So I'm going to say 3 out of 5.
All right. Yeah, I'll give this a 3 out of 5.
Oh, cheers. Yeah,
cheers.
That's a wrap. Thanks for joining us. You can learn more about Trek at Trek.com.
And if you liked this episode of Sidetracked, you can rate and review it, share it with a friend, and smash that subscribe button.
See you next time.
See ya. Oh, one more thing. Last episode, we were talking about email engagement and unengagement and how you shouldn't be emailing people who aren't opening and clicking on your emails. I recently received an email newsletter with the subject line, "It's not me, it's you," which got me to open it. And then inside the email, all caps, bold, big red box around it, "Click here to remain a subscriber." And inside the box, it explains that clicking on newsletter links is the only way for this sender to know that I still want to be getting their emails. And it says, if you don't click by next month, you will stop receiving this newsletter. Click here to let us know that you're still an active subscriber. Thanks. Of course, I clicked. I still want to get this newsletter, even though I don't open and read every single email they send me. And I just really liked that because instead of just ceasing to send to me, they're giving me a chance to stay opted in. And every time I get an email from them, I think about it now, like, oh, I should open it so that they don't stop sending me emails. So just a little tip.